morning. Namaste. Nothing need be done. Nothing need be said. Our true nature is like space that's never formed into anything. To simply realize that about ourselves is all that it means to wake up. And it doesn't have to look like any particular thing. So we're not trying to achieve a thing. We're just simply realizing the essence of our own being. We're realizing that rather than being confined to some kind of limited idea about ourselves, we are free like space. Timelessly free like space. All the words that come out of our mouths are nothing but pure space. All the thoughts that seem to be in our head, those are pure space too. The head, in fact, is pure space. So, you know, if we look for headness or wordness or thoughtness as some kind of essential thing that has a substantive character of its own, we won't be able to find it because none of these things, no matter what they are, have an independent origin. They have no independent origin other than pure space. And that pure space is not just an inert void where we're holed up in some kind of an extreme of non-existence. Pure space is inseparable from awareness, pristine luminous awareness, and inseparable from compassion, the emanation of compassion. So that if there is some kind of awakening that doesn't include those three that are entirely inseparable, then it's a state. It's just some kind of state we're in. But it's still an anomaly of point of view. It's still within the realm of cause and effect. So for us as human beings, it's so simple. We either recognize who we are as pure space or we don't. One is called recognition, the other is called non-recognition. But here's something very interesting about that. If we hear that awareness is possible, pristine awareness, vast as infinite space, that it's the true nature of our reality, and we want to be that, then most of the time we think non-recognition is the problem. Non-recognition of awareness is a problem that we have to get rid of, that we have to work on, that is separate from recognition of awareness, and that we have to somehow expunge, annihilate, refine, transform, analyze, tweak, in other words, modify non-recognition of awareness in order to make it into recognition of awareness. If that is our approach, then we'll spend our entire life doing that. Because you see, non-recognition of awareness exists only within the realm of cause and effect, within the realm of points of view, the points of view that are inseparable from the pure view of awareness. And that non-recognition of awareness that's taken to be all caught up in causes and effects, the causes and effects are countless and ceaseless. They're just the dynamic energy of awareness and nothing else. However, they are countless, ceaseless, and unpredictable. So if we're constantly within the realm of trying to affect non-recognition of awareness through some kind of a cause, then we will be involved in a limitless endeavor. It's a limitless endeavor because points of view of cause and effect are ceaseless. They're countless and they're unpredictable. They have no limit. No matter how much we try, no matter how many eons we efforted, we would never find any kind of limit to the dynamic energy of awareness. It's inseparable from it. So the key point is that non-recognition of awareness and recognition of awareness are not two. They are not two. they are not two. Everything is contained in everything. So for everyone who has ever realized the pristine reality of who they are, at some point they've had a big laugh over the reality that even when there's non-recognition of awareness, it's recognition of awareness. Non-recognition and recognition are not two. And such is the case with anything else we might try to shape up about ourselves, you know, like our thinking or our emotional states. Our thinking and aware, pure space are not two. Our emotional states and aware, pure space are not two. Our human body and aware, pure space are not two. Waking, dreaming, and sleeping and aware, pure space are not two. Birth, life, and death and aware, pure space are not two. These are very important understandings for us to have about the true nature of our reality, because without them, we can never move beyond the realm of cause and effect. Just because we've taken up the vantage of cause and effect doesn't mean that we have to continue to live that way the rest of our lives. It's just simply what we've introduced ourselves to. So there's no time like right here to introduce ourselves to something else. And you see, no matter how long we live, even if we lived for trillions of years, we would reach no limit on the full evidence of awareness being more and more magnificent in every moment. There would be no limit. So we're not trying to get to some kind of a state or something or some destination where we can say, I've arrived, this is it. That's impossible. The reality of this inseparability of the dynamic energy of awareness and awareness is that all the points of view, all the labels that might be applied to indescribable, aware, basic space, all those labels, no matter what they are, they're inseparable from that awareness. In one moment it might be nothingness, the next moment emptiness, the next moment compassion, the next moment bliss. The next moment, utter lucidity. The next moment, omniscient, timeless awareness. There are all kinds of descriptions that point to the reality of what we are. But they aren't required to be who we are. They're just like putting a flower in a vase, you know? One flower after another in a vase to make a beautiful bouquet. So you see, if we have this reality of natural rest that is the essence of our being, that's becoming more and more fully evident, if that is the reality of our everyday life, and we only rest naturally without learning about what resting naturally really is, then it's like trying to climb a mountain without eyes. It's very hard to do that. If you want to climb Mount Everest or any mountain, even the hill right over there, it would be very important to have eyes or a guide with eyes to get up that mountain. And also learning alone without the natural rest of the ease of our being is like trying to climb a mountain without hands or feet. So that would be impossible to do too. So we never have to adopt any kind of extreme position like, oh, I'm awake and I don't need to know anything more about that. I don't need any help. And, you know, especially for us who are Westerners, we know very little really about awakening in our culture. We're just beginning to have a culture of awakening. We're at the very beginning of that. And our tendency as Westerners has been to either oversimplify awakening or overcomplicate it. One of the two, you know. We oversimplify it by reading a book or going to a couple satsangs and saying, oh, I'm awake now. I'm awake now. I can do whatever I want. You know, it doesn't matter. Everything happens spontaneously, so. Doesn't matter what I do. Or that's an oversimplification. Or making awakening into something is an oversimplification. An overcomplication is just to have so many extraneous things attached to the idea of awakening that awakening becomes obscured. It becomes lost in all kinds of forms and words, and it's difficult to directly see the reality of what we are. And so overcomplication too, and this occurs too with oversimplification, is that many times it's posited that there's a personal identity that's in the way, that there's this personal identity that doesn't recognize awareness, and that's in the way of recognizing awareness. A personal identity is just like any other point of view. So if we were to say that there is a personal identity that can somehow cause the effect of awakening through doing certain kinds of methods and practices, then what we'd be saying is that it's possible for one point of view to affect another point of view, a personal identity point of view to affect another point of view, called awakening, and put in place all kinds of causes that would lead to that. But if we look at that with just a little bit of discernment, we see that that's absurd. You know, it's absurd because every point of view, no matter what it is awareness alone. And every point of view, no matter what it is, has never forgotten that it is awareness. As it only is awareness, it's never forgotten that it is awareness. So, you know, very often when people come to this gathering, they definitely find, and there are many in this room for whom this is the case, that nothing need be done. That just by showing up here, conviction dawns. That it naturally dawns. That the ease of our being is so obvious, so pure like space, so unrelenting in its unrelentingness, that nothing need be done, nothing need be said about it. Just the ease of what is right here is easily taken up as a lifestyle, so to speak. The mind net that one may have taken oneself to be, it just either disappears entirely or gradually disappears. So that's the easiest approach, just to keep showing up and conviction will dawn. It's guaranteed. And if that seems too easy for you, then rest naturally without seeking anything. When a point of view comes up, just rest naturally as the essence of being. And do that for short moments, repeated many times until it becomes permanent. So, you know, the reality of what we are, it just can't be captured into any kind of space. And nothing needs to change. Nothing needs to change at all. No matter what it is you're involved in your life, because you're here doesn't mean you need to change those other circumstances in your life. You know, like often people will come here and they will have been with a guru or a teacher for many years. And then they come here, you know, they've been looking for enlightenment. They come here and they realize who they are here. And then they want to know, well, does this mean, you know, that I can't see my guru anymore? Well, you know, there is no love limit. There's no love limit. Why would that be necessary? Nothing needs to change. We all enjoy what we enjoy. It would be so preposterous for me to be so presumptuous as to say that someone had to limit the nature of their love relationships because of our friendship. You know, so all of these ways of being that we are, they are so natural. Our awareness is perfectly natural. We don't have to change any of our circumstances to be who we are. Our compassionate is natural. We don't have to change any of our circumstances in order for that aware, compassionate beingness to be fully alive. We don't have to change our love for anyone, and we don't have to shape ourselves into any kind of idea of what an awakened person is. None of that need be done. None of that need be done. We can just pursue our life with total ease, enjoying whatever the forms are that we enjoy. Because you see, our body is not this form. Yet this form is inseparable from what we are. You know, so this form and what we are, they are not two. They are not two. But when we only take ourselves to be this body, then we don't recognize that we are pure like space, like the infinite expanse of best space. And we see all of our life is going on within this body and nowhere else, within our thoughts, within our emotional states, within our actions, within our accumulated memories. That's what we take our life to be. Once we begin to enjoy more and more the ease of our being, we realize that although we've taken this to be our body, more and more, not only are we this, but we are the vast expanse of a mind, body, speech, and activities that cannot be limited in any way. They cannot be limited or restricted in any way because they're pure space, just the vast expanse of infinite space and nothing else. And what that means in a practical way is that we come into the heartbeat of reality. We live as the heartbeat of reality. When we realize this about what we are, what we truly are, it's like having a warm beating heart placed in our hands. You know, it is so evident, it is so clear that we've never been anything other than that. Just imagine that, having a warm beating heart in your hands. It would be impossible to deny the power of that. So you see, this power of what we are, when we enjoy the ease of our being, we find that we have enormous potency. Enormous potency, the enormous potency of what we are, it naturally settles out all the points of view we've been caught up in. We don't have to do anything. We just rest naturally in all of the muddy waters we've stirred up, they naturally settle. They naturally settle in and of themselves without us doing anything. The more we try to do, the more mud there is in the water. But the less we do, the more the water is just crystal clear in and of itself without us needing to do anything. It may seem that we're free in each perception, that more and more perceptions are free. We find freedom in the immediacy of one perception, and when we find that freedom, all of a sudden many perceptions are included. It isn't just that one. We're not working on one perception at a time. The ease of our being resolves all points of view in its basic space, resolves all points of view in its pure space. All points of view are always and forever exhausted within the basic space of awareness. So we find that as this ease of our being becomes more and more profound, more fully evident to us, that we just don't have to do anything at all. You know, there's no more need to rest naturally if that's what our practice has been. That dissolves in basic space too. And then there's only aware basic space, entirely compassionate and wise and nothing else. So don't ever look for something to be. There's no thing that you need to be. Everything that you are already is. And this is true for everyone, you know, whether they're sitting in this room or not, whether they know anything about awareness or not. The reality of every being, no matter who they are, is that awareness, pure like space, is our essential nature. Our essential nature, the warm beating heart that's always in our hands, that's totally undeniable, that can never be contained by anything. When we know that about ourselves and we really make a commitment to that, then we know conclusively too that that's true for everyone. We can't make this commitment to ourselves without it being conclusively so for everyone. There's nothing to get and no one to get it. Nothing at all to get and no one to get it. And all of this comes about easily through just the naturalness of our being. What we are is so totally natural. It's not a spectacle. We can make it into a spectacle if that's what we enjoy, but it needn't be a spectacle. It needn't be a spectacle. I can speak to this just in a completely heartfelt way that we are so natural. I am an ordinary person just like all of you. Simple, natural, direct, and ordinary. There's no distinction or difference whatsoever anywhere. There's no individual who has more of a corner on awareness than some other individual. So there's no person who has more of awareness than someone else. Awareness is a single expanse of equalness and evenness, applies equally everywhere. And when we realize that as the reality of our own being, it's just inescapable. We see that for ourselves, we know that for ourselves, we live that for ourselves, and we realize that it's true for everyone, that everyone is like space that has never been confined by anything. When I talk about like space, I mean like space. If we look into the sky, just look into the sky. I don't know if you can see it out there, but if you can't, turn around and look out the window there. Just into the vast expanse of infinite space. And if you've taken yourself to be limited to the awareness that's within your body, just allow your awareness to mingle, to blend with that vast expanse of infinite space. This is very simple, very direct. I can't tell you just in your doing that for an instant, if you haven't done it before, it is profound. It is really profoundly powerful. Even when if you just did that and you thought, well, wasn't profound for me, just wait. Just wait. Because soon all we see is the skyness of everything. The skyness of everything, no matter what it is. You know, the sky, if we sent a bird into the sky or we flew into the sky ourselves and we flew and flew and flew forever. Forever, throughout all timeless time, we would never reach any kind of limit. And this is the reality of what we are, too. We have no limit. We have no limit, love limit, or any other kind of limit. There's no compassion limit. There's no awareness limit. There's no contrivance anywhere or inhibition in pure space. It's impossible to take pure space and ever form it into anything. So you see, this idea that we have formed pure space into something, it's just it's just made up. I'll keep it as simple as that. It's just made up. It's really made up, you know. Anyone, I know that if the full evidence of this can be so for me, that it can be so for everyone. I'm so clear about that, and I have been for 25 years. Because, you know, I didn't do anything to realize who I am. I didn't know anything about awakening or enlightenment or that it applied to me. I knew that there was a reality of pure space, but I didn't realize that that was something that could be fully evident as my lived reality. So I understood it, but I had no idea that it applied to human beings. I thought it was something over there that didn't have anything to do with being a human being. And so, you know, I got into a point in my life that I just couldn't get out of. No matter what I tried, I couldn't get out of it. I had all kinds of thoughts, I had all kinds of emotional states, all kinds of circumstances, and they were all centered on me, you know, me, me, me. And I couldn't find any way out of that within myself as a limited idea of I, me, and mine. I just couldn't find any way out. No matter what I'd learned about philosophy, And I started early with philosophy, reading Being and Nothingness when I was a young teen, or even younger than that, you know, all these other books. Existentialism, talking to the greatest beings and philosophers and finding out what they knew, trying to make sense of it all in my head. Oh, the greatest psychologists to the greatest physicians, people who knew everything about everything. But none of these things I had learned availed me anything. Not when I got into a real pinch, none of them availed me anything. I couldn't find a way out through point of view. All I could find were more points of view. But when I was faced with the hopelessness, the desperateness, the total suffering and bewilderment of all these points of view proliferating everywhere, with no way to contain them or get a grip on them, I saw no way out, no exit. There was no exit. There was no exit from point of view. I was never going to calm point of view down with any other point of view. That was very clear to me. And in that complete hopelessness and the realization of the import of my own suffering, the significance of this incredible suffering of all these points of view, I suddenly realized that all these points of view, no matter what they are, that they all arose in, of, as, and through complete relief. That was all that, I didn't even call it that. I just knew that when I relaxed as the essence of whatever that point of view was, that it was relief. I felt complete relief and ease. And I did that rigorously because I was in a place I couldn't get out of. Of course, I wanted to apply myself. I was motivated to end my suffering. I didn't like the thoughts and feelings I was having. And so at first I thought I had to get rid of those thoughts and feelings, but what I found instead is that those thoughts and feelings are inseparable from complete relief. They're inseparable from complete relief. Complete relief is the heart essence of every single one of those thoughts and feelings, of every single one of those circumstances. And when I rested in this totally natural way that is the reality of every human being, that became more and more obvious. And as it became more and more obvious, there was a warmth of compassion that arose in me, an innate, inherent compassion, not a compassion I needed to develop. It's a compassion that can only come about through getting really in touch with one's own suffering. Because see, when we come in touch with our own suffering in just that palpable, heartfelt way, then we realize that our suffering and the suffering of all beings is equal. You know, so this is the awakening of compassion in us. This complete relief of aware basic space or awareness or relief or whatever you want to call it, it's inseparable from compassion. And after about 10 days, all of a sudden, I realized, no, this is who I've always been. You know, this is who I've always been. Just permanently, I've always been this, and so has everybody else. I always have been this, I am this now, and I always will be this. So there wasn't anything to do. There wasn't anything to say or think about. Just pure space and nothing else. Entirely aware and completely compassionate. So you see, this is very simple. This is very simple. Anyone can do this. Anyone on earth can realize this. Anyone at all. It's very straightforward. There isn't anything required of us. But yet, at the same time, nothing needs to change. So no matter what it is we're currently enjoying in our life, we can continue to enjoy that. If we live in an ashram, or we live as a sadhu, or whatever it is, we don't have to change our lifestyle to be at ease. Wherever we are, we're at ease. Wherever we are, we're at ease. I'll tell you a story about a person just like us who found ease in a very dire circumstance. a Tibetan Buddhist monk who was imprisoned in China for 20 years and tortured every day. And finally he was released, and His Holiness the Dalai Lama said to him, "Well, what was the greatest danger you faced while you were in prison?" You know, here he had been tortured every day. Everything he had ever known about anything had been taken away from him. He had been a great lama, you know, a high lama, teaching thousands of people, teaching other lamas, people who had already realized who they were. He was such a high lama, the full evidence of Buddhahood had come to be in him. And here he was tortured for 20 years in a prison in China. And when the Dalai Lama asked him this question, he said, "The greatest danger I faced was losing compassion for the Chinese." So you see, when we know that another human being just like us has been able to allow the full evidence of his awareness, no matter how dire the circumstance, then we know too that no matter what comes up, we can face that. Because when we see that just one other human being, just like us, another breathing, living, heart-beating human being, has realized the full evidence of their awareness, no matter the circumstances, then we realize that's true for us too. We realize that's true for us too. You know, there were many great beings from Tibet who had to flee and have had to flee over the years. And all the beings, no matter how great they were or how everyday they were, even if they'd never heard of awareness, many of them were killed on the way, many of them murdered. Neil Shokempo, who was a great High Lama who died recently, he too was a High Lama in Tibet, and he taught many people, thousands of people, other Lamas. His Holiness the Dalai Lama, many people he taught. He fled Tibet in 1959 with 70 people, and five of them made it. And when he came here, then he had to beg. He came to India. He had to beg. He lived as a sadhu in Rishikesh, just with a cloth wrapped around him, you know, no retinue, no high lamas, nothing at all. Feeling very bereft, you know, he felt great bereavement. He didn't see his family again for over, 35 years, his surviving family members. And all the while, it was omniscient, timeless awareness that was the substance of his being that carried him through. So you see, when we hear stories, and this was so for so many other people who fled Tibet, so many other people, you know, either dead or totally poverty-stricken, nothing could be brought along, you know, everything had to be left behind, no matter what it was. But what wasn't left behind? Timeless awareness, that wasn't left behind. So no matter where we are, what circumstances we're in, and certainly we live in a time when I really need to be candid about this, this could happen to any of us. You know, this could happen to any of us. We're living on tenterhooks right now, you know. So there's a great deal of tension in the world, and we all know that we have no idea what's going to happen next. We don't know that anyway, but today it feels like, wow, it could really be significant. There could be significant changes. So this reality of what we are, it's very practical. No matter what comes up, we're free. You know, we're timelessly free. We might not like what's coming up, but not liking an omniscient, timeless awareness are not two. You see, we don't have to get rid of everything and make it into some kind of impartial, neutral state. The reality of what we are is a vibrant totality that excludes nothing. Even our bereavement over whatever it is, the state of the world, our own state of suffering, whatever it is. Everything is included. You see, this is part of the compassionate outpouring of timeless awareness. There's never been a split or division. Everything's included. The pure luminous space that is so real right here is always the reality of our being. It's always the reality of our being. It isn't dependent on circumstances at all. Know that to be conclusively so. What you experience here is your reality always. Know that and rest as that, no matter where you are or what circumstance you're in. It's you, after all, who is experiencing this vastness of pure space. It isn't the circumstance experiencing it. It's you. So you see, this is a direct introduction to the reality of your being, the direct experience of your own being that's never been confined in any way. We'll sit quietly for a moment before we close.